Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Mackenzie from South Sussex, New Jersey.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mackenzie. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. I would just like to first say thank you so much for having me. I truly enjoy speaking and sharing my experience, strength, and hope with others, and hoping that I carry this message to the best of my ability. So what is AA? For me, AA is the triangle, right? We have the service, which is, coming to these meetings. Like, my primary purpose is to come to these meetings and to, help the next sick and suffering alcoholic, And it's easy because being a young person in recovery, it's easy to be distracted by other things and find other, reasons of going. But, that's why it's really important for me to be reminded that my primary purpose to coming to a meeting, especially today, is, it was because I wanted a moment of just feeling like I can, at first, when I was first getting sober, I wanted just an hour of just quieting this psychotic mind of mine. But now I come to meetings because I want to carry this message out. And then you have the fellowship. And the fellowship is really important because, that I feel like it brings us all together and that it gives us that unity. And, like, being an alcoholic, like, throughout my whole soul sickness, like, no matter how much I isolated, I thirst for that unity, right? But because I'm just so uncomfortable in my own skin, like, I was so afraid, like, I couldn't get with you and you couldn't get with me. So, like, that unity was broken, especially when I was in that soul sickness. Now we have the recovery, and the recovery is the 12 steps. And for me, like, the 12 steps is the most, one of the most important parts of this program, but I need to keep each side of the triangle sturdy, right? So I guess I'll talk about what's been going on recently. I guess honesty has been a huge theme of mine, and I've had a recent experience where I met this girl, like, months ago. She came into the rooms, and she was struggling, and, I was sponsoring her for a little bit. And, the call stopped coming, and it was hard for her to be honest with me. And recently, I found out, and I saw her through Facebook. Like, she looked like she was doing great, right? She, pretty beautiful blonde girl. She was 24, she was going to school, she had friends. But it just goes for show, like, this disease doesn't discriminate. And I just saw her in a casket, dead, because of this disease. And it goes for show, like, you can look like you're doing fine, and it looks like you're okay on the outside, but on the inside, we have these demons, and we just, it can lead us to death. And it's a great reminder that this is a serious disease. Like, especially when I come into meetings, and it's good to, like, laugh and have fun, and, like, that's what it's about, and, like, having those really happy, wonderful moments, but it goes for show that we need to be reminded that this is a serious disease, and we can die. Going to awake with a woman so young, it was really sad. It was sad, and her family found her dead at 24 years old. I guess I'll just start by qualifying myself. At a very young age, way before I picked up a drink or a drug, I was at complete dis-ease with myself. I hated myself. Oh my God. So uncomfortable. I acted out at a very young age. I would sneak out of my house, vandalize the neighbors' houses just because I thought it was, like, cool, I guess, because I wanted to get out of myself in some sort of way because I was so sick in my head. And this disease is, centers in the mind. and I couldn't, you know. So it goes for show, like, for me, like, this malady was real, like, way before I picked up that drink or drug. So moving forward, I take that first sip of alcohol, and at that moment, I finally found ease with myself. I'm like, wow, like, the crazy chatter in my head has silenced, and, like, I finally feel comfortable, and I can be whoever I want to be, like. And from that moment on, I fell in love with that solution. Like, I ran with that solution. And the progression is real. Like, when I first started, like, I'm not, like, don't get me wrong, in the beginning it was fun. And I was, like, really young, and I was going to these crazy frat parties and partying it up. And, you know, I went to a lot of older kids' parties, too, so I thought I was really cool. And it was a lot of fun. Like, I went to Ragers. And I was always, like, one of the youngest people there. And it's very interesting being a young person in sobriety. If anyone's wondering, I'm 22. I got sober at 20. My sobriety date is December 6th, 2014. I do have a sponsor, and I do have a home group, and I have commitments that I go to. But without those things, I find it would be very difficult for me to continue on this journey because I need all of those things, especially being young, because I'm, like, surrounded by it a lot, especially at work with all the young kids partying and stuff. But I'm very grateful for my journey. So the progression. I started off with drinking, and it led to a lot of really bad decisions, getting involved with really bad people. I OD'd for the first time, I think at like 15, and that didn't stop me, and I kept going. Consequences wasn't a thing for me. I really didn't care. You know, I did anything I could to just get out of myself. We have that physical allergy where the moment I intake alcohol, I can't stop. And, like, it's the only way. And I will use it as much as I can until almost death. Just because I can't spend one moment on this earth, like, sober because I can't deal with the thoughts in my head. Because I hate myself so, so, so much. So much. So we have that physical allergy, and then we have that obsession of the mind where, like, you know, I would go to, like, crazy, like, to a crazy extent to, like, my using the night before, wake up the next morning, and think that I could successfully drink again. And for me, I feel like that describes my obsession of the mind, like, thinking that, that I could drink successfully when I know I can't. And I've been into hospitals, I've been to psych wards, I've been to many places, and it just hasn't stopped me. It goes for show, like, this disease is extremely powerful. Like, it can, you know, it can really tear you to the ground. I had a lot of experiences with the obsessive, abusive, codependent relationships too. So that went hand in hand with it as well, and it made it very difficult for me to, step away. I guess going more forward into my drinking career, I got to a point where, you know, the alcohol and, like, the abusive relationship and all of this crazy stuff, like, all these solutions that I've been using hasn't been working anymore. And, like, it was scary because I've been using that solution for so, so long. And, like, going to something that I think would help me, you know, bring me back to sanity, and I take that in and it hasn't, and it's not working anymore, like, it scared the crap out of me. So with that, like, that was, I guess, moments for me, like, I need to, you know, figure something else out, or, like, death is definitely upon me. Like, I had to make a change. I had an experience where I went on a crazy binger one weekend, and I completely blacked out for, like, a whole weekend, and I could have killed so many people. I was in my car driving, and I could have killed so many people and myself. And I'm just so grateful that I didn't kill anyone. And I'm grateful that I'm not in prison right now, because I should be. So in the back of my mind, there was always that idea of meetings. And I was introduced to the meetings throughout, like, the end of my drinking career. And and it was always in the back of my mind. So, like, when I see, like, a newcomer that comes in and they don't fully get it, like, I understand, like, that, like, them being in this meeting is so important. Because for me, like, when I first came in, like, I was still, like, nodding out, like, in the back of the room. Like, I wasn't fully here, but, and I was, like, hungover or whatever it was. Like, I was always not fully here, but something always stuck to me. And it was always, like, that idea, like, you know, it was always, like, an idea that it was here, I guess. So when I got to the point where I knew my drinking and alcohol wasn't working anymore, I came to the realization, like, why don't I try this AA meeting? So I come into the rooms. It was a celebration meeting, and I'm watching these people celebrate, and they're sharing their experience of how they're, like, flipping tricks and, like, dealing drugs and stuff and homeless and all these crazy things. And the people that were sharing was not the people that I was looking at. So at that moment, it felt like, at first, it was like the first moment of hope for me. Like, that's why it was so important for me to, like, be there at that moment, was because I finally found a moment of hope where this program could possibly work for me. So I gave it a shot. But I was completely broken. Like, when I came into these rooms, like, I haven't showered in a month. My hair, I haven't brushed my hair in, like, a few weeks. I haven't brushed my teeth. Like, it was disgusting when I first came in. Like, it's a miracle, like, how I am right now. But, so I was completely broken, and I was completely willing to do anything that made absolutely no sense to me. Because when I first come in here, nothing makes sense. Like, why do I have to do an inventory? Like, why do I have to pray? Like, why do I have to do those things? But because I'm so broken to the point where every solution in my life has stopped working for me, and I want to feel a moment of, like, I'm okay. Like, I'll do anything to just feel that. And I'm addicted to feeling good. So I want to do what makes me feel good. So I saw, you know, a woman that felt good, and she was doing her thing, whatever she was doing. I didn't get it at the time, and I wanted what she had. So for me, like, that's, for me, like, I gave it a shot. So I had to get into a state of willingness where I was completely, like, open house in a way, where I was completely, like, willing to do whatever it took. I mean, don't get me wrong, in the first, like, 6 months, I was kind of on a pink cloud, and I definitely bulked on, like, doing the steps right away, because, you know, we go to these young people's meetings, and we mess around and have fun, and, but, you know, and that's where I had emotional bottom, where I was like, wow, like, the moment I come to these meetings, right, I'm not doing the steps, I'm not helping others. I'm not doing what I got to do. And I'm at the meetings. I'm feeling good, right? But the moment I leave the meeting and I'm at home by myself, I feel like such crap. And I'm like, why do I feel like this? I'm going to meetings. So I asked this woman, I'm like, what am I doing wrong? She's like, it's a 12-step program. Have you ever thought of doing the 12 steps? I was like, oh, sounds like a good idea. So, you know, we started doing the work. And for me, like, having that first moment of clarity, like, my whole alcohol career, so my first moment of clarity for me was my first step. You know. And I'm truly grateful for my story. You know, I came in at a really, really young age, and I can connect with a lot of young people. And today, there's so many young people in the rooms now. It's really cool to see it. And, like, it's amazing to see someone so young and that comes in, and, like, you see, like, the light come onto their faces, and, like, you can, like, really connect with them and build these friendships and stuff, and it's really cool. So, yeah, so that was, like, my first step experience. And then step two, like, you know, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And, like, I have to be reminded, like, my God has a plan for me. Like, I need to truly believe, like, my God can restore me to sanity. I truly believe, like, that my God, like, I'm okay, like, at this moment. Because if you really think about it, like, if anyone's struggling right now, like, there's nothing wrong with this moment right now. Like, this moment, like, you're here, you're with us, you're sitting in this chair, everything's okay. Like, in my life, I've never experienced one thing in my life where, you know, something bad was happening, and, like, at the end of that experience, the world was crumbling, and bad things were really happening. Like, every experience I've experienced, everything was okay in the end. So, like, having that state of mind, like, really is really helpful. Like, I am okay right now. Like, I'm not going to be okay. I am okay. Like, I'm fine. Everything's okay right now. You know, and then we have our third step, you know. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And, like, for me, like, that's just letting go and letting God. Like, when I have to deal with, like, certain experiences in my life, you know, I rely on my God that he or she can, you know, take care of it in a way. Like, not just, because I can't get rid of problems. Like, God can't just take them away, but I can rise above them. Where it doesn't affect my life in a way where my defects come out, where, like, I act out on them, where I hurt people. And, like, I'm powerless over people. Like, I can't control what people do. But I can control how I react to certain situations. You know? And, like, the girl I was talking about that just recently passed, like, I can't control that she, you know, went out. Like, I tried my best to be a good example of this program, but she just wasn't willing and she wasn't ready. And for some people, like, that's their only way of finding peace. The third step and the second step, like, I fully, like, I, you know, when I first went through steps two and three, like, I didn't fully, like, understand, because there's a difference between reading it in a book than actually having an experience with the steps. So for me, like, I experienced these steps, like, going through my step four and my step five. So for me, like, I had to have an experience with the steps than just reading them out of a book and just having faith that, you know, this is the direction I need to go in. And faith is, like, a funny thing because, like, when I first came into the rooms, I'm like, faith, that sounds so, like, church. And but now I look at it in a way where I just see, like, I'm just gonna have faith and hope that I'm gonna be okay. That's all it is for me. So now we have step four, and made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And I hear this message a lot, especially when I meet new women in the rooms, like, oh, the fourth step is so scary, like, oh my God, and they get all like, and I'm like, that's such a bad message, because it's not. It's really not scary. It's nothing, there's nothing scary about it. I don't think that gives off a really good message, but because it's soul searching. It's such an amazing, like, way to, like, look at things. And I mean, people might think it's scary because we write, like, things of our past, but it's not, we're not, like, bringing you back to the past. It's more of just seeing a whole new perspective of what you thought it was. Like, for me, like, the four steps are good, like, a good analogy. It's like a tapestry, like, you look at it and you see something. But then when you go through a fifth, when you go through a fourth and a five, like, you'll look at that same tapestry and it looks completely different. I'm not sure if that makes sense, but for me, like, the fourth, you know, writing all that down, well, when you first write it all down, it doesn't really make much sense why you're doing it. You just gotta have trust that it's, you know, to do it. And, but doing the fifth, you know, admit it to God and ourselves and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Like, it's so important to talk about it with another human being, with a sponsor, because they can help you see a whole new light of a situation. And, like, for me, like, going through a fourth and a fifth was so important because it allowed me to avoid getting into situations where I caught resentments or into situations where I can look at fears in a different way or in a different light, or, like, how I can avoid harm. So it's really just changing your perspective on certain things. Like, for example, like, I had a really bad resentment towards my boss because he yelled at me in front of everyone. And I'm like, he's such a jerk. Like, I just don't like him. Like, ugh. So going through steps four and five, I was able to see a whole nother perspective, that he's a sick person, or that I'm just resentful because I didn't stand up for myself. There's other ways of going about it and not having to look like a victim. Because I feel like throughout my whole life, I always wanted to play that victim card because it felt good, and then people felt bad for me, and I feel like such crap right now, and they, like, give me things, and it's just not a good way of living, because it's such a selfish, self-seeking act, and it just doesn't feel good, and, I don't have to live that life anymore. Like, when someone comes out and hurts me and harms me, like, I don't have to, like, you know, make them look like, oh, they're such a bad person, like, because they're not, you know, they're not genuinely, like, mad, like, they're bad people, they're just angry because something crappy probably happened to them earlier in that day, like, you know, like, so we go through the resentments, we see who we're resentful at, or what we're resentful at, and we see what it affects, and seeing my part in it. It's really a soul-searching experience. Like, it's so important to be so thorough and really understanding what you're writing, because I can write whatever, you know, I can make a check mark, like, it affected my self-esteem, but why? Like, how does it affect my self-esteem or my pride or my ambitions or, you know, all of those things? So out of those steps, I'm able to make a step six. And a step six and a step seven. We are totally ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And we are entirely ready. Like, I'm ready to let these things go because there's some defects like I want to hold on to. So I'm comfortable, and it makes me feel comfortable, and like people pleasing, because it's like an easy way out sometimes. But if you really think about it, like, how many times have a defect kept you from an opportunity? And like, that's something that I like to look at when it comes to this certain step. It's because my defect of, like rejection in a way, or like I'm afraid to like voice my opinion, and it keeps me from the opportunity of expressing myself. So if I hold on to that defect, like, I can't be my true self. So it's so important for me to, like, in certain situations where it's really affecting my life, where I'm going to have to humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings, and that's step 7. And because defects can really, like, for me, like, when I first come into the rooms, it's about alcoholism. Like, I want to stop drinking. But now that I've been in the rooms for, like, 2.5 years about, it's not just about drinking anymore. It's about my actions and my behaviors. Like, I am a sick person when I'm not doing this work. I can cheat. I can steal. I can be a bitch. Like, I can be nasty. I can get really easily irritable. And all my defects flare. And they completely come out. So if I'm not doing this work, like, those, you'll see, like, the really nasty Mackenzie you guys don't want to see. So in those moments of, like, wanting to ask God to humbly remove them, you know, I can finally get to my true self. And they don't just dissipate in thin air. Like, I am who I am. You know, I just have to be humble enough to have an open mind to do something different. And I feel like that's a huge thing, because I have to have an open mind that maybe something else out there can work for me, like a whole different behavior or a whole different way of living. Like, it's a humbling experience. Like, it's a humbling act, because it's trying something different and having faith that doing something different could work for you. And that's all it really is. It's really simple. Like, it's really not that, like, I don't know. But, made a list of all persons we have harmed and become willing to make amends to them. And became willing to make amends to them. For me, like, some people can do, write out amends lists and, like, do them all. Like, for me, that's not the case. But, you know, I have to, you know, if I want what my sponsor has, or if I want what the happiness in this room has, like, I have to take the necessary steps, even if it's uncomfortable. And I know, like, if it's uncomfortable, that's where spiritual growth is. Because that's what people tell me. If you're uncomfortable, you're spiritually growing. I'm like, ugh, I don't want to be uncomfortable. I just want to sit in a corner and just be sober, right? But I can't, because it doesn't work that way. So I made a list of the people that I want to make amends to. I mean, it's a very scary step to people, but if you put it in a way where you make a list of people you're willing to make amends to, and then a list of people you're not willing to make amends to, it makes it a lot less scary. So I did my family members first, and I'll talk about my experience with my dad, because it's pretty, like, interesting. So I go up to my dad, and I ask him if he's available, because it's not on my time, it's on his time. And I ask if he's available to sit with me. So I sat him down, and it was a random time of the day, and he was working outside. He's a police officer of Jersey City, detective, sheriff, I don't really know, something up there. And he works at the methadone clinic in Jersey City as well. So he sees, like, the bad sides of addiction and alcoholism. Like, and, so I sat him down and I was like, I made a list of all the things of that I thought I harmed him with. Everything I could think of. And I asked, is there anything I'm leaving out? And he's like, yep. And he gives me, like, he gives me a whole rant of what I left out. And one of the things that really affected him was when I went on that binger that week, I got caught with the police 3 times. Like, I pretty much could have gotten 3 DUIs within 12 hours. Like, I should be in prison. My daddy came to the rescue and saved me from all of those times. Because he's in the police department, and he got me out of all of it. And I am truly grateful, because I should be in prison. Like, I should be in prison right now. And that embarrassed him. Like, that was embarrassing for him to, you know, come to the rescue for his daughter. That, you know, and he works at the methadone clinic, and he sees this every day, and he had to live with the fact that his daughter is an alcoholic, and it was embarrassing for him. And I didn't know that. I had no idea, because in my mind, I'm so selfish, because I'm ran by selfishness. And I think that he's just grateful that I'm not in jail or in prison or whatever it is. But I can't see self. Self can't see self. The only time self can see self is when I'm sitting in front of someone I've hurt and I ask them, is there anything I've left out? And they give me a description of how I've harmed them. It's the only time I'm able to see self. So that's why doing these necessary steps, 8 and 9, is so important, because that gives me an idea of what my addiction actually looks like. And him expressing that to me was so, I felt like a whole new person, because I saw the harm, literally, and the sadness and the harm and how I hurt him literally fly from his face, because he was able to express that to me, because I gave him the time to express that moment of, it was such a wonderful moment. I mean, it was crappy and it felt like crap to me, but it was good, because I was able to see growth within my dad. My dad's he has a New York accent, kind of Jersey accent kind of guy, like a big, tough, like, Jersey cop kind of guy. So seeing him in that moment of, like, rawness and vulnerability, it was a wonderful moment. If it wasn't going through these steps and taking the necessary steps to get to that point, I would never have experienced that. And that's, like, one of my favorite amends, because I became a lot closer with my dad. And I asked him the 3 questions, which is, I ask, have I left anything out? He gives me, usually the person, you know, gives me, like, a long list of everything I've left out. And then I ask, how does it make you feel? And my dad definitely shed a tear, so that was, like, crazy, because I've never seen that in my life. Is there anything that I can do to make it right? And he said, sign up for the police test. And I'm like, ugh. I was like, I don't want to do that. So I did, because I have to. And I did the written test. There's no way I'm doing, like, a physical one. You have to actually write the counties you want to, like, I keep forgetting that we're in Pennsylvania for some reason. But you have to write the counties that you're, that you want to, like, police in, I guess. I don't know. And so I wrote, like, Morris and, like, Sussex County, because it's, like, the less crime. Like, I don't know. I can't imagine myself, like, pinning some guy to the ground, like, hold up. Like, I don't know. I can't do it. So I did the written test, and I passed, and without studying. I don't know how. And it was good, and I expressed to my dad, I don't want to do that with my life, and he was totally understandable, but I did what he asked of me, because I, you know, with these people I've hurt, I owe them more than I can give. Because I put my dad and my mom through hell. Like, my mom would ask me to, like, please come home for dinner. Just come home for dinner while I was using or drinking. I'm sorry. And I would just fight with her just because she wanted me to be at the dinner table. Or, like, I was at the dinner table and I, like, fell into my food. You know? And like, how heartbreaking is that for, like, a mother to see that? You know? It's so heartbreaking. Like, I owe them the world. So I could do the police test. Like, it's not... It's something I owe to them, you know? Like... I had some amends. A lot of people say they get these amends, and a lot of the people are like, oh, is there anything that I left out? And usually the people are like, oh, no, you're good. Like, none of my amends have been like that. I've gotten these long lists of how much of an asshole I am. But, you know, those amends are like the greatest ones because I see so much growth from them. You know, continue to take a personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted them. For me, it's just, you know, living in steps, you know, after I'm, you know, while I'm in step 9, because step 9 takes pretty long, I need to, you know, live in steps 10, 11, and 12. And, you know, take personal inventory. Like, when I... You know, I'm in this program, you know, I'm trying this thing to the best of my ability, but I'm a fallible human being. Like, I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to catch resentments. The nature of a resentment is always to resurface. If I don't do this work, I'm going to be resentful. And I'm not perfect. Like, I don't do this work like I'm not, I don't do this work, like, to the best of my ability all the time because I fall short. So for me, like, you know, it's really just taking that spirit, like, have it taking that spiritual temperature. I remember my sponsor said that to me. That's like with steps 11 as well. Like, sought through prayer and meditation. It's not just prayer and it's not just meditation. It's both. So for me, prayer is so important. Because I need to be, like, for me, like, it's not like a Bible-y, churchy prayer. It's more of just like a conversation to remind myself that God is here and God is present and I'm under the care of God. Like, when I get all psychotic and crazy, like, at work, like, because I work as a server, so there's a lot of intense things happening there. And, like, when I slip back into self and I, you know, and I can find a moment where I can just pray to my God and ask my God, please take over. Like, can I start this day over today? Can I just be back to myself today? Like, it's simple things like that. Like, praying before my speaking commitment, like, asking my God to, because I was nervous, because I'm, you know, I get nervous, and, you know, asking my God to, you know, guide my words, my thoughts, my actions, hoping that I can give a message of recovery today. And meditation, like, I found so many answers through meditation. For me, like, when you practice meditation for just 2 minutes, like, just the act of doing it makes me, like, feel like I'm actually doing it. Like, just taking 2 minutes to just try to do it. Like, for me, like, I'll put, like a yoga-y song on or, like, a meditation song and, like, a little, I don't know. Some weird stuff, but I'll put that on and it'll help me, like, quiet my mind. I'll focus. It's just quieting my mind and having that practice of just quieting it, because my mind is, like, everywhere, like, going, like, 100 miles per hour. And through meditation, it's like I could finally practice to quiet it. And when I have that practice and I come more, not, like, advanced in it, but I'm more used to it. Like, I can find answers in it. And it doesn't come in a yes and no form. It can come in a form of being honest. Like, oh, just be honest. So then the answer then turns to a yes and no question. But it's just those moments of being with my God. And I've had an experience where like, I opened up to someone, and I had this expectation that they were supposed to act a certain way. And I feel like a lot of people experience this too, where like they have these moments with these certain people and like they couldn't have these moments with anyone else but them. But I've had this moment where I opened up and I was fully vulnerable and raw, and I opened up to like very personal things, and the person judged me. And I was very resentful for a very long time because of it. But I was able to change the perspective where, and I had to hear it from someone else, because I truly believe God speaks through people, that in that moment of me being vulnerable, like, I went through that because my God was allowing me to be free from that, for myself, disregarding the person's reaction, right? So it's just, like, in moments like that, like, I just feel more closer with my God. And, like, knowing that whoever was in the... there could have been whoever in the room with me that listened to what I was saying. But in that moment, I knew that God had a plan for me. And his plan was to be vulnerable in that moment and accepting myself and being fully open house and feeling and having acceptance of who I was at that moment. And it felt good. Like, in that moment, it felt good. But I know, like, I felt like such crap afterwards, after the reaction. But, I don't know how I got into this story, but I think because we're talking about God and stuff, where in that moment, it just brought a level, like a degree where I just felt a lot more closer to my God and, like, building that relationship. Because there's a difference between believing and having a relationship. And then, you know, 12, like, helping others, like, that, what helps me stay sober today. Like, I bring women through this work, and seeing the women, like, and seeing women, like, going through this work and being psyched about the program and seeing the light come back in their eyes is miraculous. It's like, when I see something like that, I'd rather, like, see that than be out there. Because it's so much more miraculous. You know, it's such a wonderful feeling. Like, helping others, like, that is what helped. I feel like I have purpose in life today. Because I'm able to help people with my experience. You know? And that's what gives me purpose. Because living on this earth, like, especially when I was drinking, like, I had no purpose in life. Like, I hated my life. If I could die and not care. But now, like, if I die today, like, there's so many women that are relying on me. Like, I get, like, 20 phone calls a day because women want to talk to me and hear what I have to say and help them and connect. It's such a wonderful, like, wonderful feeling. There's nothing more than that common bond with another alcoholic. Like, you can't get it, like my dad is an alcoholic. So it's different, like, you know, like, but the connection I have with another alcoholic is just, it's so strong and sturdy and just there, and, like, you know, we understand each other and we can get along and I get it, like, I understand. And when I first came in the rooms, wow, it's, like, how I remember this, I would come in, like, I had, like, a few days, like a month or something, and I'd always say, like, you don't understand, like a little brat, to like the people in the rooms. And they're like, we totally understand. We've been through what you've been through. Like, stop saying that. So it's true. Like, it's just, you know, we get it. Like, we understand. We've been there. Like, I've heard many fourth steps from all different women. And some of the experiences are different. Some are more extreme than others, but most of them are the same. Like, we've all had the feelings and the emotions are all the same. So, yeah, like, you know, I'm working with, like, 4 women. It might go down to, because, you know, I don't know. They're not, you know, I can't help everyone, really. And that's really what it comes down to. I can, you know, I'll always have a helping hand. I'll always be there. When you're ready to do this, I'm there for you. Like, just whenever you're ready, I'm here. Like, I love them through God's eyes. And I see them through God's eyes. When I see a sick person that's hurt me, or I just see a sick person in general, like spiritually sick, or, you know, I have to look at them through God's eyes and know that they're sick, and I can't judge them because I am them. I was them. And it's just that unity, like, you know, where we all come together. Like, I hate seeing separation in AA, like where you have like the cliques and stuff. I mean, it doesn't happen a lot. It happens more at young people's groups, I guess. But I just don't like it because it's like, us as alcoholics, we need to be together. Like, no matter what, like, we have to stick together. It's just so important because, like, I don't think I would be here without you, without all of you. You know, this program has saved my life, and I love this program. It's a big part of my life today, but it's not the only thing in my life. I go to school. I have a great family life. I've made many friends in the program, but I'm friends with them outside of the rooms. I've connected and made many friendships. The greatest gift in sobriety for me today is not feeling so high, not feeling so low, but having moments of feeling content where I just feel indifferent about everything. I'm not sure if that makes sense, but like, I feel, and there's moments where I just feel like, okay, like, I'm just here. Because my life ran on those lows and those highs, and I was always chasing them, like chasing them hard. And today I don't have to do that. Today I could just live my life and not focus on the past or the future. Because if I'm holding on to the past, I'm holding on to the future, like, what am I holding to date with? So those are definitely one of the greatest moments, being rocketed into the fourth dimension. Like, I've heard a speaker share this once. I think you have the third dimension is like your plane, and then the fourth dimension is like the linear. So that's the now and that's the time, I think. I don't know. Geometry. But it's the time, it's the moment, it's being in the present moment. And that is so important. I feel like that's what that means to me, is being in the moment and not thinking about, like, what my life looks like tomorrow or next week or when I'm married or, I don't know, some silly nonsense that makes absolutely no sense because of my alcoholism. Yeah, so this program rocks. I mean, it's really awesome. Like, I love it. And I love my life today. And, you know, I practice these principles outside of the room. Like, I don't have to just help people in the rooms. I can help people at my work. I can help people at the grocery store, like, open the door for them. Like, what does this book teach me? It just teaches me to be a good person. Like, you know, that's all this book really teaches us, is just getting back to, like, it's spiritual yet moral. Like, it's just, you know, it's just being nice, right? Like, so do I have to go till 8 or I mean 9? Oh, I could keep going. I mean, I'm not sure when to end. I guess I'll be done. Thank you, everyone.